Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
And welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Tonight is the second part of my talk with Jack Brewer about his book, The Greys Have Been Framed. And we get into military psyops and things like that in this part, as well as much other stuff. Real quick, go to www.wheredidtheroadgo.com for all your Where Did the Road Go needs, including if you want to become a patron, in which case you would have heard both parts of this show a couple of weeks ago in one part. Or you can just give us a one-time donation if you want to help out with the show. You can find an entire archive of all of our shows on the website. There's just a ton of stuff there. There's book reviews. There's a couple of free books. There's a lot of stuff to go through. So check it out if you haven't already, wheredidtheroadgo.com. And here is part two of my talk with Jack Brewer. Let's look at the sort of government side of this. You cover quite a bit of this in your book. Government disinfo and how they have manipulated the UFO field and possibly some of the people like Betty and Barney Hill, for example. One of the things there were actually two things that really stood out to me. One, you mentioned someone watching, what was the movie about the Iran?
Oh, yeah. Argo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it said something about the U.S. creating the coup, and you said someone stood up in the theater and screamed out that that wasn't true, established fact.
Yeah, and they were so re-stimulated emotionally by this line in the movie that the narrator says that they just scream, "That's not true." And it's like, wow, and that's like 50 years after the disinformation campaign, you know, and they're still clinging to it. Yeah.
That the other one that I've just never really thought about. I mean, I was fully aware of Project Paperclip, where we brought in all the Nazi scientists, but you go on to explain how many of them got involved in mind control projects and experimenting on American citizens, not totally unlike what they were doing in Nazi Germany, just with kind of a different face on it.
Yeah, that is unfortunate and a dark aspect of American history and the American intelligence community. And there's a psychologist and journalist I mentioned in the book as well named Dr. Jeffrey Kay, and he's a good follow on Twitter for those of you that are interested in this topic. He's covered a lot about the Japanese Unit 731 and that it was off. Members of it were offered amnesty after World War II, along with the Operation Paperclip people. And it is just a dark part of our history. And me personally, I would find it surprising if some of this in some way, shape, or form didn't bleed into what got put into popular culture about UFOs and alien abductions and evolved somehow. In fact, on one of my more recent blog posts at the UFO Trail, I explored how the crashed flying saucer story has been used over the decades. And some of it is really critical of the intelligence community, and it's pretty clear that these were doctored stories by the intelligence community. And to tie that back into the involuntary human experimentation atrocities, in even more recent years, when Hank Albarelli Jr. was researching for his book, A Terrible Mistake, which is about the Frank Olson story and his involvement in the experimentation in the Cold War and the human experiments. And Albarelli wrote how even in recent years, he was getting contacted by people that were trying to kind of urge him in the direction that Olson was killed because he knew about UFO crashes and that the material got taken to Camp Dietrich and where Olson worked. And it might seem like a more likely scenario that he was being given these stories that Alberelli was to get him off of the suspicions he had of other reasons that Olson might have died or possibly even been murdered. And it'd be tough for me to think that all these lines don't cross in some way when we do have the same names showing up in the different genres, and that some of these people, Sid Gottlieb, that was pretty much the point man and project director for MK Ultra and some 178 known sub projects, was also having some of his CIA assets look into UFO stories and sightings. One was a magician named Mulholland that he seems to have had investigate some UFO reports. So it's concerning and it's interesting that we have these CIA personnel that we know were involved in human experimentation that also had a foot in the UFO community, and for reasons we really don't know why. And that continued really right on well into the more recent years of ufology, that we, you know, as George Hansen, author of The Trickster, has written, that it's really astounding it doesn't get more attention. How many CIA personnel and high-ranking intelligence officers are regulars or were in the UFO community? There's just entire areas of research just fertile and waiting to be gone down that path, in my opinion.
One of the things you talk about in the book that I was totally unaware of, I mean, I was aware of the phenomena of the ghost rockets in Sweden, but you talk about how this was potentially a government disinformation plan to make these seem like UFOs.
I don't know if it was... I'll put it this way. I don't think the intention was to deceive the public. I really have to give a hat tip to James Carey on. He has done some really good work on the 1946-47 time frame, and I'd highly recommend people interested in that era of ufology visit his blog, James Carrion's blog. It's called Anachronisms, and he has a book there by the same name you can download for free. And yes, he's done a lot of work on the ghost rocket phenomena, and he makes a very convincing case that it was a covert deception operation. He has some different ideas of why it might have been, and they are very interesting, but for this context, I would just say the fact would still remain that writers in the UFO community chose to look at it as UFOs, and then it does appear that possibly even once the intelligence community saw how this played out, it may have been of value in evolving intelligence operations as well. And as I've highlighted what I thought was some of his more interesting work in my book, known deception planners and implementers were closely involved with the ghost rocket phenomena, and including Admiral Hillenkoetter, that went on to be the director of the CIA and work with a civilian UFO organization after he, you know, quote unquote, retired. So there's a lot of stuff to take a look at there. And again, I'd really recommend a dive into James Carrion's work on that topic.
And his blogspot is historydeceived.blogspot.com.
Right, right.
And I just, nope, totally blanked on my next question. Oh, the Benowitz affair is a great example, however, of the government kind of using disinformation and just messing around with the whole UFO field. And even though we know that that was, you know, them basically making him think he was going crazy, there are still people who take his data as fact. It just fits into their belief system, and they continue to perpetuate that.
Yes, they do. They do. Greg Bishop wrote the book Project Beta on the Benowitz affair, and Mark Pilkington and company did a documentary called Mirage Men that many listeners may be familiar with. And yes, Richard Doty was a primary player in that, and he admittedly misinformed Paul Benowitz about circumstances. Doty at the time was employed with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. Alejandro Rojas at Open Minds has done some good FOIA work on that story. It hit dead ends, but I think it's still relevant that it hit dead ends and that the Air Force doesn't want to address whether Doty was working in an official capacity, as he claims. And if he wasn't working in an official capacity, Alejandro Rojas wanted to know what kind of disciplinary action the Air Force might have taken. And that to me seems like a pretty fair question. And the Air Force doesn't want to address it one way or the other.
Of course not.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I find interesting about the Doty chain of events is it ties into the Simone Mendez case that I wrote about in my book. And she was employed with the Air Force during the same time frame, the early 1980s. And interestingly, she had a pre-existing interest in UFOs. When she was approached by a co-worker at Nellis Air Force Base of Area 51 fame and given supposedly a carbon copy of a secret document that would have been extremely interesting to the UFO community. And at the time, Simone had a top secret clearance and worked in communications. And she held on to this carbon copy for a few months and was eventually approached and grilled by the FBI and the Office of Special Investigations of the Air Force. And she was eventually cleared of any wrongdoing. But the reason I bring it up in the context of the Benowitz case is it's interesting that Doty supposedly fabricated information and passed fraudulent documents around the community, or at least showed them to Linda Moulton Howe. And he now jokes about it years later, you know, on a documentary with Mark Pilkington, laughs about it, where in the same time frame with the same agency, OSI, Simone Mendez didn't even claim to create the document and was grilled in what turned out to be a very traumatic 6-month ordeal for her of several interrogations before being cleared of charges. And I think that's interesting in a number of ways. And one of them that ties all the way back into the whole what's the intelligence community's angle on UFOs is that Dr. Bruce Maccabee wrote in his book about UFOs, one of his books, that his longtime CIA contact, Ron Pandolfi, had claimed that CIA interest in the UFO phenomenon was for counterintelligence purposes and to try to catch spies, and that they had reason to believe that the KGB, the Russian intelligence, was trying to infiltrate the U.S. intelligence community and was even going to try to do it through specifically American ufologists. And while we don't know exactly why Ron Pandolfi would say that to a UFO writer or how true it might be, I think it deserves to be considered, especially in the context of the Benowitz and Mendez stories, because it does seem to me like OSI might not have been as interested in the document Simone got a look at as much as who she was sharing it with and who her contacts were, and the fact she had a pre-existing interest in UFOs might be how the OSI was taking a look at her possibly in the first place. And I think that's interesting, and I think there's some circumstances like this that the UFO community doesn't give enough attention and consideration. While we're coming at it from the angle of what about aliens, there's other aspects of society, such as the intelligence community and spies, that may be coming at it from a lot other different angles and fabricating stories for particular reasons. And I think we need to beware and be aware of some of this stuff.
What do you think of the situation that's going on right now with Tom DeLonge?
I don't feel very enthusiastic about it. I don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to produce fruit. I think that it's interesting in that even now we still seem to have members of the intelligence community seemingly talking to a young, higher-profile person about alleged UFOs and alleged aliens. There's a lot to unpack and sort out there about whose intentions and what's going on, but I do think that it's a story that deserves to be unpacked. I just think we need to be really careful about what we think might be going on, that there might be, and this kind of epitomizes the whole community, a lot of people there with a lot of different agendas might be contributing to that situation.
Yeah. So one of the things I think you talk about in your book is with the whole hybrid thing, where, you know, people are claiming to be hybrids. Barbara Lamb in particular is hypnotizing people and, you know, coming up with all this information about their how they're half alien and half human. But none of them suspiciously will go get DNA tests.
Yeah, and that's correct. And I do document an email exchange I had with Barbara Lamb and how she doesn't want to be just won't comment directly on why that is or if any independent third-party medical professionals have examined any of these people. And even aside from Barbara Lamb, I think the community as a whole and its writers and its researchers and its community leaders need to give a lot more attention to the advances made in science and forensic science and medicine. And essentially, the alien abduction narrative has been surpassed by scientific research. And a lot of the things that were being claimed in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, that the best we could do was suspend judgment, could be falsified or proven. Just about, or at least a lot more could be revealed that they don't seem to have any interest in pursuing. We could even go a step further and say not only are they not pursuing it, they seem to be trying to block the progress as well. And like I say, our community leaders, our researchers, I feel should be a lot more vocal about holding researchers accountable for that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, that's the new thing right now is the whole hybrid belief system.
Yeah, it does. It's concerning. I, again, am concerned about exploitation of people that are sincere, that identify hypnotists as authority figures, that identify people they see speaking at conferences or on TV as someone that must know what they're talking about, must know what they're doing, that they put their trust in, and that loyalty just hasn't been earned, and it's concerning to me.
So if you are someone like Emma Woods, who believes that she had real experiences, but it's all been contaminated now by this hypnosis and the damage David Jacobs had done, how does someone like that go about trying to separate out what actually happened to them versus what they now believe happened to them?
That's a great question. My initial response with that would be to ask qualified people. Years ago, I listened to part of my day job stuff is sales, and I listened to a series of cassette tapes, kind of dating myself there, on motivational speaking and that type of thing. And one of the things that stuck with me that this speaker said was, don't ask your neighbor about your health and don't spend your time complaining to your doctor about your neighbor. And I thought that was really good about, right, like if you need an attorney, go to an attorney. Don't just talk to people at work about some legal problem. And I think the same applies about memory and trying to get to the bottom of possible paranormal circumstances is, while there may not really be anybody that can tell us what happens or what did happen in a particular circumstance, I am an advocate of good mental health practices. I think that if a person is painstaking, they can find a good therapist that clicks for them. It might not be the first one they deal with, might not be the second, but it might. And if we were as persistent about finding good support systems as we are about watching UFO documentaries and reading UFO books, I think we could accomplish building good support systems pretty well. So I think that we need to identify the right people to ask our questions, and then we need to weigh it proportionately. It's okay to all have opinions and to ask a wide variety of people for opinions, but I think it needs to be weighed on areas of expertise as well. And I think we also, as far as your question about what should a person do, I think we have to get okay with not knowing. We just have to get okay with shrugging our shoulders and saying, I don't know what happened. And that's just the end of that story, you know?
I would agree wholeheartedly with that. And I think unless you can prove it, that is the best attitude to take at it, because you don't get stuck in a paradigm or a belief system about it.
No, you don't. And we see the consequences of that a lot in this community. I mean, really, man, when you get on a UFO forum or on social media and you argue with somebody about something, it can become pretty clear pretty fast that you're not really arguing about this case. you're arguing about whether, like, that this case represents a belief to them about what happened to them. And so we really need to, like, put our personal stuff out of it when we're talking about the Hills, or we're talking about Emma Woods, or we're talking about Whitley Strieber, or any case, and objectively sort through that case without feeling like my UFO sighting is devalued if I don't stand up for the Hills, because that's just not an accurate interpretation of reality. But we see that happening a lot in these circles.
I feel like with Strieber, one of the things I liked about him right off is that he wasn't trying to put labels on what was happening to him.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely has some areas where I'm going, I'm not sure I believe what he's saying. Although at the same time, I feel like he may believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Whitley's pretty enigmatic, in my opinion. In the 90s, I read his stuff with great interest. I thought whatever we want to say about him, Communion was a cornerstone. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not sure. I just, like we say, I don't know would be the answer to what happened with Whitley. I think we could add to that, even in a person that's not high profile, if you hang around this community long, you know any number of people that aren't high profile that feel they've had a lifetime of one unusual experience or another. I bring that up because the Whitley Strieber type people are self-described experiencers. There's, even in their specific circumstance, there's going to be several different explanations for the several different experiences. They're not going to all be one, it's aliens, or it's the intelligence community, or it's bad dreams, or it's trauma. Yeah, like you say, sure, it's all going to play in there. And then we have the confirmation bias. Once you start thinking it's one thing, then you start building the case for that in your head, and you start looking for evidence to that effect. And I think, going back to John Mack, I think we can really see some of that and the differences between John Mack and Barbara Lamb and Bud Hopkins is they tend to find experiencers that then reflect back what their ongoing theory is. And Barbara Lamb is really a great example of that, like you were saying, the hybrids thing now is a thing. It would just be absolutely extraordinary that this woman just happens to be running into these people that have alien blood and not some of the other theories that are out there. And I mean, it's just difficult to give that much credibility as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I also noticed I had one of her hybrids on, and one of my main questions was, what did you remember prior to hypnosis? And it's very hard to get a straight answer.
Yeah. Yeah. One of Hopkins' cases, the Linda Cortila Napoleano thing. She, if I recall correct, even admittedly said like 80% or something was hypnotic recall. Like, wow, you know. So yeah, that's a tough sell, man. That's a tough sell.
And from what Jeff Ritzman has said, a lot of times with hypnosis, the memories, even a false memory under hypnosis, feels more real sometimes than actual memories.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And again, to call on the experts like Shaw and Loftus, they've shown as well that it still affects the way you interpret things. Just from that hypnotic memory will then change your memories about other things as well that weren't even explored in the hypnotic session. So it's really a mess to start moving that stuff around in your head, and you know, a number of them in ufology aren't or weren't even qualified, like aren't even hypnosis experts that were doing this, that then want to be recognized as expert because of the volume they've done, but right. Never even actually got educated on what they were doing.
You wrote an article in, I'm going to remember the
go ahead.
You know, I said, I'm doing this. I'm slightly sleep deprived, so my memory's worse than normal. The book that just came out, you did an article on.
I did. It's UFOs Reframing the Debate.
Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome. And it was edited by Robbie Graham.
Yep.
And he did a great job working on it, and I appreciate it. And I did. I was invited to contribute a chapter, and I was proud to do so, and I'm glad that he identified my stuff as being a worthy contribution.
And what did you write about in this?
The title of my chapter was The Future Leads to the Past, and that's kind of a play on, we were talking earlier about the Eastern philosophies, and that what has happened in the past will be a subjective and affect us in subjective manners, and then we'll base what happens later, we'll interpret things in ways that will conform to our preconceived beliefs, and the way we've interpreted things in the past will play into what we expect is going to happen in the future. And my chapter is about how there's been some misperceptions in the UFO community, and I touched on James Carrion's work and the way the 1946-47 time frame really set the stage, and may have largely been, a lot of it may have been misinterpreted, yet nonetheless is viewed as like a foundation of current ufology. And then I touched on some things that the UFO community could do to give itself the credibility it has at least long claimed to want, and that would be to give more attention to forensic evidence, as we've discussed here tonight, and separating speculation from actual fact. And we really just can't talk enough about treating UFO sightings and alleged abductions like a crime scene, as much as funds and manpower allows. And in some circumstances, sure, that's not going to be realistic. But in the circumstances where writers and UFO investigations are just spending months, if not years, hypnotizing people and following their stories, but offering nothing but testimony, a lot more could be done to actually try to get some of these claims under a glass about people claiming to be hybrids or claiming to have had their fetuses taken, women that claim to have been pregnant and then missed the pregnancy. There's a lot of testing that could be done that could determine the extent that those perceptions may be accurate or not.
Right, right. Yeah, because we should be able to test whether or not somebody was actually pregnant.
That's correct. And Dr. Tyler Copejohn, a microbiologist that has been a popular podcast guest and writer in the community because he's willing to wade through these topics in reasonable manners, he's helped me understand that there are now non-invasive tests available for women that cells may remain up to decades after pregnancies. So these type of tests should at least be pursued and in the discussion of women that claim to have or believe themselves, investigators that believe these women to have been possibly impregnated in some otherworldly manner and then lost the child in some bizarre hybridization plot, these tests should certainly get more attention in our community.
I would think, though, that some of the true believers are just going to say, well, the aliens, they can make it so that the pregnancy can't be detected.
Yeah, you can always just keep talking yourself around it. The Stan Romanek case kind of comes to mind with that whatever has or has not happened to the man, his supporters can be some of the most difficult to have a debate with and actually get any resolution because of what you're saying. The practice seems to just be ingrained into that way of thinking, that it's just always some police officer did away with the important evidence, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, with Romanek, it's amazing to me that he still has supporters when you look at his, quote, evidence, and it's so blatantly faked, and yet people just eat it up.
It is amazing. It's a, it's certainly an interesting thing for sociologists, whatever's behind it all, like Billy Meyer, like that people continue to argue this, I think probably is indicative of what I was saying earlier about, I guess it makes people feel that their experience is more legitimate if you can like just litter the internet with more and more stories. I don't know, like I'm just at a loss, like you, of why people are even arguing for the legitimacy of things that just seems like even a cursory look would have you just go, oh, I'm not even wasting any time on this one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even, it's like Romanek wasn't even trying, and it's like, and it worked. So he continued not trying. It's like, you know, he could do this crap and put it out there and people are like, oh my God, look at that. And he was probably sitting there going, really? Okay. Yeah. I'll do more. You know, I'll shine my flashlight from the roof and, you know, and film it on a security camera, and then everyone will be like, ooh, UFO.
Yeah. It's something. It really is.
Yeah. I'll put a little gray puppet up in the window, and, oh.
Oh, I know. What I even wrote about on my blog a little that, well, when he got busted, when Romanek was throwing stuff around the room when he was doing the podcast interview on video and trying to imply something paranormal was happening, and he was just caught so red-handed even he couldn't, you know, float that one any further.
Uh-huh.
And then the way he followed up on that one was he said he, like, see, this just blows me away, man. He said that he was threatened to discredit himself on purpose or harm might come to him or loved. I know, man. Like, oh my God. Like, wow. You know, I don't know whether to go well played or just go, oh, you know,
yeah.
Have
yeah.
you no shame, you know? And like, so you're telling me that like an anonymous phone call said this message, and so you went and did it. Like, instead of just, call somebody else, you know? Like, right.
And is it part of that sensationalism thing? Because like the podcast that he did that on, you know, had him back and was totally believing his version of events.
Absolutely,
and I'm thinking,
they did. Yeah.
It's like, are you just doing this because you know it's going to get you ratings because it's a sensational story? Or do you really believe him?
Yeah, that blew me away too, that they were like vouching for his character and everything. And like, wow, you know, like just wow.
And that documentary was, the documentary was just plain out hard to watch.
I interviewed the makers of it, but I honestly never even watched it. I haven't seen it.
Someone had recommended that we do a show on it, so we all watched it and did a roundtable on it. And I bet 20 minutes in, I'm going, I don't know if I can do this. You know, it was just so ridiculous, but, you know, I did it. It got a little bit better, and I don't think it was a very well-done documentary to begin with, and then the subject matter, that they took it as if he were telling the truth, you know? And even at the end, they're, like, throwing out the, you know, well, you know, there's a virus that puts child porn on your computers, and maybe this is what happened to Stan. And it's like, right, okay, you're not being biased here at all.
Right, and that's exactly what I meant when I was saying the more likely scenarios that our community seems to manage to not educate itself about. Let's just say a police setup of an alien abductee doesn't seem like Occam's razor's finding to me in this circumstance.
Yeah. And he was found guilty, so.
Yeah.
Of having it, not distributing it, which is fair. There didn't seem to be any evidence that he distributed anything.
Yeah, I think sentencing is set, if I recall correctly, for October. So maybe they're going to appeal in the meantime. I don't know. It's.
I don't think they brought aliens into the thing like they said they were going to.
Yeah, now that's a valid point in itself. With all of the buildup to it, of the story was he'd been set up for outing the alien presence.
Right.
And then after all of that, the actual defense, as I understand it, was more along the lines of someone at the home downloaded it, but you can't prove who it was. And I interpreted that the detectives and the prosecutors come back to that was, you know, we felt pretty clear who it would be, because as I understand it, and I read some of the files on it, they felt like that the IP addresses that were downloading could be identified as the ones that Stan would be using to do different things online that conclusively were Stan. Mm. But yeah, point being that, like you're saying, they said we're blowing the alien lid off of this mess, and then they never even went with it. They just went with, you can't prove it was Stan that downloaded it, and really didn't even deny it was downloaded, as best I could tell.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, so you'll get someone who's maybe questioning this stuff or is more of a skeptic to this stuff, and they see, you know, the Stan Romanek story, and they watch that and they think, oh my God, who can believe this crap? And then you have people who have real experiences out there who then get that, the brunt of that, you know, it's like, oh, you think you had a UFO experience? Yeah. All right. You know, that type of stuff existing makes it much harder for people to be taken seriously who want to look into this in a down-to-earth sort of way.
It certainly does. It sure does. And that's why I do appreciate, like, Dr. Coke John that I mentioned, and credentialed people, serious people in other fields that will take our questions and talk to us seriously about it. Because you're absolutely right. It's the David Jacobs is, in my opinion, the Stan Romaneks, these type of circumstances that, like when somebody just finds out I write a UFO blog, they just like, well, you know, I'd really not even, rather not even do your interview. And then I like try to get them to look at the material, and like I understand a good story along those lines as I interpreted it was Jeff Ritzman and Jeremy Vaney wanted to interview Dr. Scott Lilienfeld on his work with hypnosis and memory, and he was like, look, I'm really not into that, so I don't think. And then as I understand it, Jeff was like, good, that's what I want to ask you about, you know, I want you to tell us the real story on it. And then he agreed to do the show, and in my opinion it was one of the classics on the topic, and I alluded to it and mentioned it in my book that they'll just assume when they see that UFO word, and they just like really sometimes don't even want anything to do with you, because why even take the chance that you're going to twist their words around and misquote them or try to argue with them about the validity of the Stan Romanek story? And it can be tough to get even the good, credible interviews and comments for your material sometimes.
I feel like, you know, someone will, you know I find out I do this show, and they'll be like, so what's the show about? And I'm always like, there's no simple way to answer that question, because there's so much nonsense out there. If I say, well, it's about the paranormal, they immediately think, you know, ghost hunters. And it's like, okay, no, that's not what it is at all. You know, a lot of times I'll come down to the analogy of saying, okay, look, we make so many assumptions about this stuff. If we see a light in the sky, it must be a spaceship. But if we see the same light in a house, it must be a ghost. Maybe it's not any of those things. Maybe we need to look at this stuff differently and stop jumping to what we think would be there.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of it might be absolutely fascinating stuff, too.
Yeah,
and I think some of it is pretty conclusively some kind of natural energy that we don't understand. And yes. I'd say that based on Hess Dahlen and the is it Brown Mountain in North Carolina?
Yep, Brown Mountain Lights.
So that's going to play in. And I mean, that could be, I mean, who knows? That could be the next energy source for humanity if we could figure that out. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when you look at a lot of UFO reports that seem to be truly anomalous, they do correspond to what natural plasma may do. But at the same time, they seem to have some intelligence to them. I mean, we could be living alongside something that's intelligent that we can't connect with, we can't communicate with, and it just pops up here and there in the form of plasma.
I mean, there's any number of possibilities, any number of things, and it all, you really do have to just kind of wipe the slate clean and start with, here's what little we know, and move forward from there and identify people that are reasonable, the most qualified to give answers on things, and identify the people that differentiate between what they know and what they want you to believe, you know.
One of the other things that's always occurred to me with the whole natural energy thing is that if we're getting, if you as a person are in an area where this, you know, where like an earth light appears, it could be affecting your consciousness. So you could be entering an altered state that might cause an Oz factor, and you may have an experience that is in an altered state of consciousness without you realizing you've entered an altered state of consciousness.
I think that's one of the more intriguing theories, the electromagnetic frequencies and, you know, natural things that that might. Yeah, absolutely. Magnets can do funky things, you know. And sure, if you didn't know what it was and didn't know the effects, which is like 99% of the population or more, that sure. And then especially when a UFO community, and this applies to a lot of the possible relatively, you know, down to earth explanations, when a UFO community wants to embrace a person and encourage them to believe in the alien narrative and the spaceship from another planet narrative and offers them support and encouragement, that they're not going to get that emotional support if they go, hey, you know, I was reading this stuff about natural phenomena, then that's going to you know, be another thing for sociologists and psychologists to study.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that altered state can also lead to a spiritual awakening, potentially, if it's not, again, hijacked by someone with an agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much about this stuff we just don't know, and we've been stuck in this paradigm of UFO abductions and spaceships and stuff. That's another thing. When I mentioned UFOs, the natural thing for someone who doesn't really look too deeply into this will say, "Oh, so you believe in, you know, aliens?" And it's kind of one of those. Yeah, I believe there's probably alien life. It doesn't mean it's coming here. And if it does come here, it doesn't mean we're going to recognize it.
Yeah. You know, while I'm thinking about it, a good story that's not as well known as one would think it is, about the possibilities of like the natural phenomena or something, is Bill Chalker wrote about a doctor named Carrie Mullis that the listeners might want to do a search on. And he is a Pulitzer Prize winning physicist, I think a chemist. And he did a great deal of research that revolutionized the DNA testing industry. And he in California had some real anomalous experience, very strange things. The one that stands out in my mind, he says he stepped out the back door of his cabin, kind of along the lines of Streber that he'd go to stay at, and he saw a glowing raccoon that said, "Good evening, doctor." and then the next thing he knew, it was broad daylight, and he was walking down a road not near the cabin. And then other people had reported odd perceptions and experience as well. And so that one comes to mind that we really, if it weren't for the UFO narrative, we'd have no reason at all to even associate that with flying saucers and aliens and things. You know, it's just the missing time thing and the screen memory. But like, that's really not even a UFO story, but is so related with descriptions that you get of high strangeness that it deserves mention. And yeah, you know, very well may be something, you know, about the woods itself or something strange, you know, taking place, some reaction some people have to something that others don't, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So can we fix UFO research?
I don't know. I think it's more than a generation away, to be honest. I think the best we can do is one at a time, take responsibility to, be the community member we'd want to see other people be. I think it's pretty much the best we can do. How about you? What do you think about that?
I think you're probably right. I think it's going to be one of those one coffin at a time type of things.
I think so, yeah.
I do think more people are opening up to the role of consciousness and all of this and how it's not so set. I had Grant Cameron on last week who, you know, back in the 70s was a diehard nuts and bolts ETH guy, and now he's like, I think it's just all consciousness. I think that it's something in consciousness interacting with us, and it's like, okay, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've read some of his work into what he suspects, you know, the presidents may have known and right. whatnot. And I, as I stated at the outset, I want to encourage any line of research people want to go with. I'm just not on board anymore with the cover up to the extent that it was looking like in the 70s and 80s, you know, yeah. And yeah, it's, there was a while, well, like with Close Encounters, that movie kind of perpetuated the, powers that be are communicating with them in a, you know, secret site. And yeah. that's a pretty tough sale anymore, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, too, that, you know, people want disclosure because they want the government to say, you know, oh, we have alien saucers and the Greys are here and so on and so forth. And what information the government has probably doesn't even resemble that. If they know anything at all, honestly.
Yeah. The presentations I've heard and watched and materials I've read that I thought were some of the more credible on interactions with the intelligence community, they never really, the spooks never really tip their hand as to whether they believe what they're asking about or they just want to see how people respond to what they're asking about. And it's probably both at different times, but I think you're on the right track there. I'd agree with that.
I always find it interesting that, you know, people will dismiss Project Blue Book as saying, you know, UFOs aren't real. But what they really said is that they weren't a threat to national security. And I think, well, that's probably true, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree with that, too. There's the ones, again, that are really good at it, put enough truth out there that they're credible, and I mean the intelligence officers that are involved yeah. in ufology. And one of them does say that the top brass has more urgent things to worry about than what somebody claims they saw the other night. And I'd agree with that. I mean, you know, there's some pretty time-specific stuff going on a regular basis,
yes.
you know?
I think if it would be one thing if we really had extraterrestrial craft flying around in the air, but I think, you know, enough study would say that that's probably not the answer. I mean, it could be, but it's probably not the answer. And I think the government probably looked at that and went, there's nothing here we really need to be overly concerned about, so let's just dismiss it. Use it as disinformation to cover our black projects, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I recently posted an NSA document from sometime, it was written sometime between 1958 and 1979. And there, this person, this NSA asset, he's unnamed, but his report stated to the effect that they wanted to be careful that they didn't write off UFOs as meaningless and then misinterpret what could have been Russian advanced craft or something like that. So he was concerned yeah. about training intelligence officers to respond appropriately to surprise phenomena. And yeah, I think that that probably is a more accurate assessment and stance by the intelligence community, that they want to know how they can exploit things. I mean, that's what they do. And
right.
How it can be weaponized. Is somebody weaponizing this topic against us? And I could there be a little green men story somewhere in all of it? Yeah, sure. I mean, I can't say there's not, but the vast amount of the data doesn't suggest so at this point. I don't think.
I was going to say something else about the whole government thing, but now I don't remember what it was. So you said people can find your book, The Grays Have Been Framed, on Amazon.
They can, and my blog as well, ufotrail.blogspot.com. It's the UFO Trail. It's a Google blog. It has a link to my book. You can read the reviews there. I post about the intelligence community reported alien abductions. The overlapping of the UFO and intelligence communities is kind of what I found an interest in. And follow me on Twitter at the UFO Trail. And yeah, pretty much keep in touch that way too.
And you have the chapter in Reframing the Debate.
I do. Reframing the Debate is available on Amazon, UFOs Reframing the Debate, and lots of podcasts around about it as well, and I think there's going to be some more coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very valuable book right there.
Thank you.
And as I said, I meant what I said at the beginning of this interview. Your book, The Grays Have Been Framed, is something that anyone who has a serious interest in getting down to what's really going on should read, as far as UFOs go. And there's not a long list of books I would say that about, but you really take this stuff in a very fair way. You're not just there trying to debunk it. You are presenting your evidence and why this stuff really just needs to be rethought, and some of it needs to just be removed.
Well, thank you. I value that assessment very much. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Enjoyed it. Thanks for the invitation, and you have a great night.
All right. And to end tonight's show, we're going to hear the John Stickley Trio. And this is a track called Point to Point. And if you have some music you'd like to use or like to let us use for the outro, contact us at contact@wheretotheroadgo.com. See you next time.
Thank you.